Hey, what's up, guys? It's Sean Hyken, co-host of Locked On Bulls. We have one more crossover episode on the Locked On Podcast Network. I spoke this morning with Jared Dubin, who's been a friend of mine for many years, back to our Hardwood Paroxysm days, and he is the host, I should say, not co-host, he doesn't have a co-host, but he was the host of Locked On Knicks on the Locked On Podcast Network. He does a great job doing that every day, pretty much, and you know, he's a very knowledgeable guy about the Knicks and about a lot of things around the NBA. And we talked about a lot of different stuff. Obviously, because it's going on right now, we talked a little bit about the Derrick Rose legal situation that's going on. And, you know, for a much more comprehensive look at that situation, you should check out his podcast from last week where they talked about a lot of different legal implications of the case, and they broke that down in a lot more detail than I could because I'm not a lawyer. And we kind of talked about it more from the sense of, like, as people who cover the NBA and are fans of the NBA and, you know, have to talk about these guys as basketball players, you know, whatever happens with this Derrick Rose case, like, how are we going to deal with this and grapple with this once the season starts? So I thought that was a pretty interesting discussion. And then from there, we get into some other stuff about the Bulls and the Knicks, and you know how they're going to look on the court, where they are in the Eastern Conference playoff hierarchy, Jerry and Grant, his development, a guy that the Bulls got back in the Rose trade, you know, how Robin Lopez is going to affect the Bulls' defense, you know, how Rose is going to fit with Carmelo Anthony in New York, you know, how Kristaps Porzingis' development is affected by that. It's a pretty good discussion. It runs about a half an hour, so remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, as always, Stitcher, Audio Boom, Google Play, TuneIn, email us, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com with any basketball questions or advertising inquiries, follow us on Twitter, @LockedOnBulls, follow me on Twitter, @Hyken, follow Cody on Twitter, @CodyWesterland, like us on Facebook, Locked On Bulls, subscribe to Jared's show, Locked On Knicks, subscribe to any of the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network, Locked On NBA, Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy Basketball with Josh Lloyd, Locked On Fantasy Football. Make sure you check out Locked On Bears with Arthur Arkush. They got another game coming up on Sunday, and we will be back on Monday with more episodes. All right, how you doing, Jared?
I'm great, man. How about you?
I'm good. I'm kind of ready for training camp to start. It's been a long off season, but we're almost there.
Yeah, we're almost there. And you know, just before we get into this, I think it's appropriate to congratulate our friend Seth Partnow.
Yeah, I saw that. That just became public by the Bucks Twitter account.
Yeah, my former podcast partner, who is now the director of basketball research for the Milwaukee Bucks, he will do great. They will do great, and both sides are better for the marriage. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, that's really it's really great to see teams hiring guys, because Seth is, you know, he's a guy that came up in the blogosphere. He's, you know, our former Paroxysm colleague. He was the editor in chief of Nylon Calculus, which is the great analytics blog, and just the fact that the Milwaukee Bucks found him based on that stuff, like, it just proves that, you know, the teams pay attention to this stuff and teams pay attention to the work that people are doing.
Yeah, and look, Seth is legitimately one of the smartest people.
He's brilliant.
That I know, and pushed, you know, the public basketball research space farther than probably anybody else out there. And that's why he's doing what he's doing now, and it's really cool to see.
Yeah, no, we're both extremely happy for Seth. He's a great guy. We've both known him for years. He's going to do great in Milwaukee. So you want to talk about the Bulls and the Knicks?
Yeah, I guess we sort of have to.
I cover the Bulls. You cover the Knicks. Let
me ask you this question first. How do you think that the acquisition of Seth Partnow by the Bucks will affect the Bulls?
Central. I mean, yeah, this is like one of the biggest acquisitions in the Central Division. Like, the Bulls got signed Dwayne Wade. I guess the Pacers.
The Pistons got Boban.
There's the Jeff Teague trade. The Cavs had some major losses with Sasha Kahn retiring.
Well, they did get Mike Dunleavy Jr.
That's true.
So.
That is true. So, okay, we have to talk. If we're talking about the Bulls and the Knicks, you know, we can't ignore, you know, what's going on with Derrick Rose right now. And you, I should point out, you had a great episode of Locked On Knicks last week.
Where with Dan Worley, who runs the sports law blog, The White Bronco. He has a primer for the Derrick Rose sexual battery case, which is scheduled right now to start on the first day of Knicks training camp. And we did a podcast sort of analyzing the recent filings at the time and where we think the case might go and what issues will be pertinent. Obviously, some more things have happened between then and now. Rose's accuser did a 90-minute interview with Think Progress where she detailed a bunch of different stuff about her and about minor details of the case because she can't really talk about ongoing litigation
in
too much detail. That's definitely worth checking out as well.
Yeah, if anybody's listening to this on the Locked On Bulls feed or maybe isn't subscribed to Locked On Knicks, first of all, you should subscribe to Locked On Knicks and leave Jared a 5-star review. But second of all, go listen to this episode because they do a really – it's about an hour long, so it's a little bit longer than our Locked On Bulls episodes usually are. But they do a great job of really laying out all of the legal implications and all of the different – things that are at play in the case, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not really interested in rehashing the legal stuff because they did a pretty comprehensive job of doing it on that episode, so you should just go listen to that. But here's what I want to talk about with it. As people who cover the NBA and cover the Bulls and cover the Knicks, like, what are we supposed to do with this now?
Yeah, it's really tough because so many people already, like, I did that episode and got tweets from several people saying, like, why are you doing a podcast on this? Like, let's focus on good stuff, you know. And my response was because, you know, we should take women seriously when they allege rape, and there are several issues worth exploring.
And it's also, you know, and I mean, if you're somebody who covers the Knicks, it would be irresponsible to not cover this pretty big legal thing that's going on with the most high profile.
it's interesting, you know, to talk about how it should be talked about once the season starts, because, you know, as we discussed on that podcast, I think there's a very good chance that the case will settle before training camp starts, and you would imagine that he'll get questions about it at the start of training camp, and then we'll give the answer that, you know, because it's a settlement and because there are confidentiality, he can't answer questions about it. And he'll just keep saying that. But it does seem at that point, I would imagine that for most people, it's just going to recede into the background and be something that happened and not talked about. And I don't really think that's the way it should play out.
No, I would agree with you about that. And it was actually kind of reminds me of how it was last year, because this story came out about a month before training camp started last year. Obviously, we asked Derek about it at training camp, and he said, you know, the story is false. I will be proven innocent. That was basically what he said. He didn't really say much beyond that. And then it just did not come up the rest of the year. It wasn't even like the reporters made a conscious decision. And I'm including myself in that because I'm, you know, I'm around the team all the time. It's not like we sat around and made a conscious decision, okay, we're not going to ask Derek about this again. But it just didn't come up again.
Yeah, and I would imagine that something similar will probably happen.
Because I remember, after his press conference at MSG, right after he got traded from the Bulls to the Knicks, nobody asked him at the press conference about the lawsuit, and I texted a mutual friend of ours who also covers the team, and I said, hey, why did nobody ask about it? I just said, hey, isn't it a little weird that nobody asked him about it? And this person brought up, just basically said, we didn't really know how we were going to spin it forward, or like what we could have asked him that was relevant about it. And it was just a little weird, just the way it's all just kind of been swept under the rug.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's how things tend to play. You know, people that cover sports aren't necessarily comfortable or experienced covering courts. There are some of us that are lawyers and understand, you know, the intricate details of what's going on. There are people that, you know, just have a distinct interest in that
Zach
kind
Lowe,
of thing.
for example, was a crime reporter before he started writing about the NBA.
Right. Or then there are people like myself and Nate Duncan that are lawyers. And,
yeah.
Right. Or, you know, there are several other people that have those kind of backgrounds as well.
But it is, I get a lot of the same responses that you get when it comes to talking about the case on Twitter, because I really only do, like, I really have not talked about it publicly on Twitter in terms of, like, my own tweets. Literally, all I've tried to do is just retweet, like, the work that Lindsey Gibbs has done in Think Progress, which has been terrific, and just the work that other people have done reporting on it, just to make sure people see it without adding any of my own commentary. And every time I do that, I get some reply from some Bulls fan like, "Hey, she's just a gold digger trying to get money from him." And it's a weird balance to walk because I want to go back at them and say, "Well, no, you can't completely just dismiss something like this. You have to take it seriously." But there's no way to say that without it coming off as, "Oh, I think he's guilty," which, again, it's not my place. I wasn't there. I don't have all the facts. It's not my case, my place to decide whether I think he did this or didn't do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's troubling that people automatically view someone accusing a man of rape as gold digging.
Yeah.
There are certainly instances where that has been the case, but that doesn't mean that we need to assume that
just because he has money, that's all that she's trying to do with this.
Right. And look, there have been instances of false rape accusations in the past.
So we can't completely dismiss the possibility of that happening either. But we also have to take these allegations seriously until they're proven right or wrong.
Right. And the default assumption, I don't think, shouldn't be that this is completely made up and she's just out for money. You know, especially, look, I don't know what happened that night. You don't know what happened that night. You know, in all probability, we're never going to know whether or not she, you know, legitimately consented to sex with Rose and his two friends / managers.
Right.
You know, no matter the outcome of the civil case that is going on right now or a potential criminal case in the future, you know, because of her, you know, lightly drunk to very drunk to possibly drugged state, we're never going to know whether she consented or whether she was capable of consent. But regardless of that specific issue, which, you know, will determine whether or not it's considered sexual battery in the current civil case, you know, there are troubling things that happen there. Like that, you know, if you read the filings and if you read Rose's deposition
and the text messages
and the text messages that they sent to each other and the different things that Rose and Randall Hampton and Ryan Allen all said, there are troubling things in
Absolutely.
Terms of his, you know, his attitude towards women, his attitude towards sex.
It doesn't make anybody look good.
It doesn't make anybody look good. That's for sure. And look, that doesn't mean that he's guilty of rape, or that he should have to pay this woman millions of dollars. That's something that will be worked out by the court system or
right.
by their lawyer.
But this is all stuff that's on the record, though.
Right, and that doesn't take away from the things that are clearly off here and clearly wrong here. And that's something that I don't think should be ignored either. And that's why, you know, it's going to be difficult for me to just sit there and say, like, Derrick Rose is just a basketball player. Like,
and here's
I don't know.
It's going to be really awkward on November 4th, when the Knicks play their first, and I believe their only game back in Chicago at the United Center with Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, and we'll get to Joe in a second after we're done talking about this Derrick Rose situation. But, you know, because both of those guys were in Chicago for so long, they're both so beloved there, they're going to get tribute videos by the team, like during timeouts. There's going to be a huge, you know, and especially with Derrick Rose being a hometown kid and, you know, the former MVP, there are a lot of people here that are still very emotionally attached to him from his years in Chicago and how, from, you know, what he was before the injuries and, you know, how, you know, him rehabbing through the injuries. There's going to be fans holding up signs to say thank you, Derek. There are probably going to be a lot of people wearing Derek Rose jerseys in the crowd. He's going to get a giant standing ovation. And this is just kind of, I mean, maybe it gets settled by then and everybody just sort of forgets about it. But if it does go to trial, I think the trial is, the first hearing is on October 4th. I don't think it's going to be done by November 4th. So this
The trial is only expected to last, I believe, 8 days. So it would be done rendered well before that as well.
Right, but so either way, like, this is just going to kind of be there in the background, and it's going to make it feel a little bit weird, like, with all the adulation that Derek is going to get from fans and from the Bulls organization when he comes back.
Yeah, look, it's going to be weird there, and it's going to be weird in several other places, and I think that it should be weird. Like, this is not something that should just, again, I don't think it's something that should recede into the background, even if he's found... not liable for sexual battery in the case. Again, I think there are still things that are very troubling. If you read all those filings that are, again, on the record and his willful statements.
And text messages that he did send.
Right. Well, the text messages, that's another thing. But, it's, you know, more troubling to me are the things he said on the record. You know, he said he doesn't know what consent is. Which I think is troubling. He said things like, you know what it is like when a man is going to a woman's house at 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, it's there are things there that are troubling.
Yeah.
And it's not great, and it should be awkward in Chicago. It should be awkward in New York. It should be awkward everywhere. People should have to grapple with the idea that Derrick Rose is not just a basketball player, but a person who
may or may not have done this horrible thing.
Yeah, and even if it wasn't rape, again, there are still troubling things there, and it's going to be strange to just refer to him in basketball terms. You know, I think, do you follow the Twitter account Will McAvoy?
I don't.
I did not like the newsroom, but I think the Twitter account is good. And, for example, he refers to Donald Trump as alleged billionaire Donald Trump.
That's good. That's very good.
Or millionaire Donald Trump.
I like that. But
there's a temptation to say, you know, like, let's say Derrick Rose settles the case. Then, you know, Derrick Rose, who settled the sexual battery case for an undisclosed amount of money during the offseason, and then continue your statement about him. Like, it's something that should be acknowledged. Look, nobody acknowledges Kobe Bryant's rape case anymore.
Right. Everybody's just kind of, you know, we spent a whole year basically just doing a farewell tour for him, and a few people brought it up, but we've all just kind of been okay with pretending like that never happened.
Yeah, and look, that's a lot of times what happens when people settle civil cases. I think these things get more serious and less one-sided attention now. You know, I think that the coverage of the Kobe Bryant rape case was very clearly slanted towards Kobe didn't do it at the time. This has been a little bit more balanced. You know, I don't think within individual outlets it's balanced. You know, each individual outlet seems to take one side or the other. But I do think that there are more outlets now taking the accuser's side than there were when someone accused Kobe Bryant.
Right.
So that part is at least a measure of progress in terms of people taking allegations seriously.
Absolutely. And, you know, also just with social media, it's a lot easier for people to get the facts out there and get stuff out there and have people actually see it.
Sure. And look, if you want to form an opinion of your own about what happened or about Rose or about the accuser or about, you know, Randall Hampton and Ryan Allen, I highly suggest going to thewhitebronco.com, and if you go to the top of the page, I believe it's like ongoing cases or public cases or something like that, there's a drop-down menu, and you can click on Derrick Rose sexual battery trial, and there you can read all of the actual filings that have been delivered in California so far. And, you know, especially if you click on the one that compares the two sides of the case and which instances of factual disputes there are, that's something that will really help you sort of gauge, what the two sides have presented so far and what they'll be presenting at trial if it comes to that point.
Yeah, and then and again, if you haven't, you should also go and listen to Jared's show where they talk about that. Or talk about all the legal stuff. It's a pretty good comprehensive breakdown.
Definitely. Dan Worley has been one of the people that has been all over the details of the trial so far. And again, I highly suggest reading his primer for the trial as well on that site, which is very, very extensive.
Yeah, so let's talk about basketball now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, obviously the reason we're doing this show is because there's been a lot of overlap with, like, players on the Bulls and the Knicks, with obviously with Derek and then with Joakim Noah going to the Knicks, and then the Bulls getting Robin Lopez and Jerian Grant in the trade. Like, so, like, where are Knicks fans at this point? I mean, besides this stuff we just talked about with Derek, where are Knicks fans about Derek and Joe right now in terms of the acquisitions?
As usual within Knicks fandom, they are split into two distinct groups. There's one that thinks the Knicks are now the biggest threat to the Cavs in the East, and there's one that thinks this is like the same old Knicks. I, as usual, fall in the middle,
right.
Which I think is way more likely than either one of those scenarios. It's something that I've said on basically all of these crossover podcasts that we've done. The Knicks are probably the highest variance team in the league this year. But within that variance, I think there's so much variance on individual levels that it's likely that they'll come down somewhere in the middle of the two polar ends of the spectrum. But I know most fandom doesn't see it that way. You know, most fandom, there are the people that think Rose will get back to playing at an MVP level and Noah will be an on-court leader and help the defense and facilitate the offense. And Brandon Jennings will be what they thought he would be when they wanted the Knicks to draft him 4 or 5 years ago. And then the Knicks will win 50 to 55 games. And then there's another side of the fandom that thinks Rose is done and Noah has been falling off for years and they're going to miss the playoffs. I, again, tend to think they'll be somewhere in, like, the high 30s to low 40s in wins and fighting for a playoff spot throughout the season. And whether they make it or not will depend on largely luck and the schedule and who stays healthy and things that are largely out of my control. You know, well, everything is out of my control. But, yeah, that's where I come down. Where do you see them?
I think them and the Bulls are kind of in the same spot. Like, I could see either of them making the playoffs or not, and I think both of them, like, their range of, like, a win total is, like, 38 at the low end to 43, 44 at the high end.
Wait, so you don't think they're high variance at all, then? That's very different.
I mean, obviously things could totally fall apart. Like, Derek and Joe could both just get injured, like, really quickly, and then, you know, Porzingis doesn't develop the way that we hope he would, which I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to be great, but I don't know. I think they're both going to be kind of in that cluster of teams with, like, Orlando and Indy and, you know, whoever else that's fighting for the 6, 7, 8 seeds in the East.
Yeah, I think there's probably, like, 7 teams for 2 or 3 spots.
Yeah, that's what's going to be really interesting to watch about this.
Yeah, Orlando, Indiana, Washington, Milwaukee, the Knicks, the Bulls, you know, potentially like Detroit and Charlotte if they don't take a step up. But I think that, you know, there's not a lot of room for all of those teams, obviously, and 5 or 6 of them are going to disappoint.
Yeah, I mean, because somebody always does. I mean, last year it was the Bulls. The Bulls were getting a lot of preseason buzz with, you know, with Fred Hoiberg coming in. He was supposedly going to re-energize the offense, and they won 50 games the year before with the same roster and made the second round and almost went up 3-1 on the Cavs, and then they just didn't make the playoffs. And so there's gonna be a team that we think is going to be great, and then just kind of doesn't really take that step forward. And I, you know, whether that's the Bulls or whether that's the Knicks, or I don't think anybody thinks either of those teams are going to be great, but, you know, I could see both of those teams missing the playoffs and having disappointing seasons, or I could see them both making it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much in the same boat. You know, on a more specific note, though, you know, obviously the Bulls brought in Grant in that Derrick Rose trade, but then they went out and signed Rajon Rondo. How do you expect their point guard situation to shake out? Or have you talked to anybody about how that's going to shake out? Because Rondo is not the Rondo of old.
No.
And it seems like they're sort of treating him like he is and impeding possibly the path of, you know, their guy that they brought in to potentially be the point guard of the future, or maybe they just brought him in to be a backup to somebody. Who knows?
Well,
how do you see that shaking out?
Well, the thing about Grant is I know that the Bulls really liked him in the draft in 2015. He went a few spots ahead of their pick, and they ended up not taking him. But I know that at the time he was a guy that they were looking pretty seriously at, so they were pretty happy to get him. As far as the Rondo thing, I think they just kind of did that because it was there for them. And when they traded Derek, it seemed like there was a chance they were, and Gar Forman said at that press conference that they wanted to get younger and more athletic, which has kind of been his talking point, even after the Rondo and Wade stuff happened, which is a little bit hilarious. But I think they just kind of decided they didn't feel comfortable having Jerry and Grant be their full-time starter. And then they looked around at the point guard free agent market, and they saw that there really wasn't much there because, like, who's the best point guard that was a free agent this summer? Mike Conley. Nobody really seriously thought he was going to leave Memphis. And then Jeremy Lin, I guess probably the second best guy, got that deal done pretty quickly with Brooklyn. So he was off the market. And then meanwhile, here's Rondo, who led the league in assists last year in Sacramento. But a lot of people still feel like, you know, that was a lot of stat hunting and not, you know, really legitimate. And you don't really have teams lining up to give him long-term offers, and the Bulls just kind of would like a name point guard, and so both sides just kind of looked around and said, hey, we don't have anybody else, let's do this for a year. So that's what I think that was. I'm real interested to see how that impacts Jerry and Grant, because he did not look great at Summer League.
Yeah, I mean, there was one game that I was at that he played pretty well in Summer League, and I did not pay attention to the rest of their games.
He didn't. Spencer Dinwiddie looked better than he did.
Yeah. How much that matters, who knows? Nate Robinson was the Summer League MVP one year.
So was Jared Bayless and Quintel Woods.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, look, he's got certain skills that would lend themselves well to being either a starter or a backup, and he has other skills that will probably limit his effectiveness. You know, he's not the strongest guy on the ball defensively. He does not have a good jump shot, but he can get in the paint, and he's a good passer. And that's sort of, you know, where Rondo is at this point, too. He's not a good shooter, but he can get in the paint, and he's a good passer. Grant's a little bit more willing to actually try to finish himself than Rondo is. You know, nobody is willing to try to finish themselves less than Rondo at this point. You know, I think either way, they're probably going to struggle defensively at point guard. You know, people think Rondo is still, again, the Rondo from Boston. He has not been a good defender for like 3 or 4 years now.
No.
And, you know, that's something the Bulls unexpectedly, I think, struggled with last year, especially once Noah went down. How do you see their defense shaking out now that they've added Rondo and Wade? And then, you know, on the other side, they added Robin Lopez, who's a very good rim protector.
Well, yes, the Robin Lopez, I'm very high on Robin Lopez. I think he's going to be great in Chicago. Like, he's, you know, he's exactly the kind of guy they needed. He's a good rim protector. And the other thing is, you know, you and I have talked about this before. Teams, going back to when he was in Portland a few years ago, his teams rebound better when he's on, even though he only averages like 8 rebounds a game or whatever. That seems like it's not very much for a center. His teams rebound significantly better when he's on the court than when he's not. So I think he's going to be great. As far as, like, their defensive personnel, there's really only 3 guys on the team that I consider to be good defenders, and that's Lopez, Jimmy Butler, and Taj Gibson. Everybody else is just kind of, I mean, Nikola Mirotic is okay. Like, he's better than I think people give him credit for, but he's more just, like, neutral as opposed to a net positive or a net negative. And then, you know, Rondo is, like you said, he's not the player he was before the knee injury that he had in Boston. I think it was 2012 that he had the knee injury. And since then, he hasn't been a great defensive point guard. Dwayne Wade used to be a very good defensive guard, but he's lost a step. He's 34. He's not as fast as he used to be. He can't stay in front of guys as much as he used to. And then everybody else, Doug McDermott is an absolutely atrocious defender. and everybody else is either mediocre or neutral at best. I don't know. It's still not going to be great.
So I think that, you know, to sort of go with one last thing here, the biggest issue for both teams might be, like, the offensive pecking order.
Right.
And how that shakes out. You know, obviously with the Knicks, Carmelo will be the number one option, and then it's sort of up in the air for who's going to get the ball the most next between Rose and Porzingis. Probably Rose because he's the point guard, you know, and maybe it should be sort of reversed. The Bulls, I think, have sort of an even more muddled situation.
Three alphas.
Because, you know, Rondo is essentially useless offensively without the ball in his hands, and has basically been an offense unto himself for his entire career after the first couple of years in Boston, and that offense is not necessarily all that effective. You know, Wade obviously is better with the ball in his hands, but at least has value when he doesn't, because even though he's not a great shooter, he's maybe the best cutter in the league. And then Jimmy Butler, also not a great outside shooter,